Easter Sunday morning to you. It's Dave Plyer on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. For Christians around the world, this morning represents Christ's resurrection, the meaning of a new life, a simpler life. So it is fitting on this Easter Sunday that we invite Archbishop of Chicago, Blaise Supich, to join us this morning. The Archbishop is an Omaha native, one of nine children. He obtained his bachelor's in philosophy from the College of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, attended seminary at North American College and Gregorian University in Rome, where he received his baccalaureate in sacred theology in 1974, his master's in theology in 75, and holds a Doctor of Sacred Theology degree from the Catholic University of America. He was ordained into the priesthood in 75, appointed a bishop in South Dakota in 98, Bishop of Spokane, Washington in 2010, and was installed as the ninth Archbishop of Chicago in November 2014. And he joins us exclusively on this Easter morning. Good morning and happy Easter to you, Archbishop Supich.
Happy Easter to you and all of our listeners.
So much to talk about on an Easter morning. I want to first talk about Renew My Church. You've been meeting with priests, parish staffs, and lay leaders in the Archdiocese to talk about the future of the Catholic Church in Chicago. More specifically, you publicly announced the launch of, in the beginning of February, of Renew My Church, outlining what a successful parish looks like. Now, the press immediately took the message on a completely different level. All of a sudden, Chicago parishes on the verge of closing is the biggest headline that I've seen. And that is certainly not the case.
Well, it is interesting, especially if you title something Renew My Church, and then the media says we're closing the churches. What we're doing is really renewing, and that's the objective here. We want to make sure we have vibrant communities going forward. You know, over the last 20 years, parishes have closed just kind of incrementally. We don't kind of notice it because it doesn't happen all in one fell swoop. My point is that let's make sure that we're more strategic about where we want to go and also to do what we need to do to make our parishes more vibrant and life-giving.
I think people in Chicago remember back in the early 90s, Cardinal Bernardin closed churches quite abruptly, and that isn't the intention here. I know there's an estimated 240 pastors, not priests, which was also misquoted, that will be available in 2030 for Chicago's 351 parishes, which means, you know, you have to look long and hard at the infrastructure of the archdiocese. And New York has done just that. Boston has done that. Many of the archdioceses around the country have rebuilt their churches to sustain themselves for the future, both spiritually and financially. And we are truly one of the last. So it's time we take a step back and look at what we have here in Chicago.
That's right. And I think what's important is to take a hard look at how there have been demographic shifts in different neighborhoods, because we were so blessed by immigrant populations that came in and built wonderful communities, and they're gone now. And we also see the civic order has a struggle as well with the schools. The mayor had to close a number of schools simply because the populations weren't there anymore. So this is about really being attentive to what's happening on the ground.
Let's talk a little bit about Renew My Church.
Well, its focus is to make sure that all of our parish communities are life-giving, are vibrant, are vital, so that they have the resources as well to carry on the mission in a way that includes people of all ages in that mission. What we're seeing, however, is a patchwork right now where we have a number of parishes that are up and running quite well. They have the resources. They have staffing. But then we have another group of parishes that maybe are just surviving. It's not about mission. It's about maintenance. And that really, in the long run, is not going to serve the people well, and it's not going to serve the church well. So we want to make sure that we truly invest in making sure that the parishes we have are life-giving and that they have the needed resources in order to go forward.
And you've outlined what a successful parish looks like. So in essence, you're putting it in the hands of the parish to evaluate their own strengths or to build towards them to become a successful parish.
Right. What we're going to do is we're going to ask parishes in groupings to work together, letting them know what the resources are going forward in terms of personnel and also finances, what also their deferred maintenance looks like in this grouping, and to come to some agreement of what's needed in order for the mission to be carried out. Some parishes will close. I've been upfront about that.
Sure.
But I think that the real goal is to make sure that people get participate in this. They have a say in what's going on. They take a hard look. They're held accountable. And then we all come to a decision.
Now, there are seven clear characteristics that you've identified. Number one is we bring people to Christ.
Right. If we don't do that, then we're just another social agency or a social group. It has to be about the mission that Jesus gave the disciples when he sent them out in the world to baptize and make disciples. So we have to make sure that we never forget to do that. We have, for instance, parishes that are surrounded by many populations that are unchurched. We want to make sure that our parishes have that outreach to people and make sure that folks do become a part of this wonderful mission of Christ.
Number two is we support each other in knowing Christ more deeply.
Yes, I think that it's important to make sure that people of all age brackets really feel a home there. Parents and families particularly need that kind of support. To make sure that they don't feel abandoned in a very difficult task that is before them in raising children in this age. So we want to make sure that we have that social infrastructure and support for them.
We have a very, very strong school. We have a very strong church. But part of the challenge is bringing those two things together. And how do we get those younger families to attend church on a weekly or regular basis?
Right. And I think we have to look at that. But we also have to look at the fact that there are unchurched people who don't have children in school and don't participate. So my hope would be we would cast the net wide and not settle for just what we've done in the past. There's no reason to rest on our laurels. The wonderful heritage of this archdiocese is great, and we're proud of it, but we need to move forward.
Number three was we encounter Christ and receive nourishment through prayer and worship.
Yes, we have to make sure that the way that we bring people together, not just socially, but also to give praise to God, is life-giving. And that means making sure that people feel at home within the church. They participate in that life. We really are not who we are if we do not come around the Lord's table on the day of the resurrection.
We build bonds among each other to sustain our life in Christ.
Yes, that kind of building of social bonds with each other is important because there are folks who are wounded within our community. There are people who suffer, as we all do, in the aging process. We want to make sure that no one's left behind. There are folks, too, who suffer from different handicaps. We want to make sure that all of our facilities are open to people, no matter what handicap that they suffer from.
We transform the lives of others through service as Christ's missionary disciples.
That's right. The transformation is very important, I think, and calling everyone to being a missionary. We all have responsibility for that. It's really key that we don't just become some sort of a social enclave in which we care just about ourselves.
We respond to the call of holiness by journeying together.
Yes, the holiness is a very important part of what we do. There are deep aspirations that we have. We all want to be good. We want to do the right thing, but we also know that there are temptations and we fail, and it's in those moments that we need to challenge each other and help each other be accountable.
We take responsibility for administration and leadership of the parish.
That's right. It's that really is talking about how we become have real ownership for the parish. We don't leave it just up to a certain group of people. Many parishes find that they're supported only by a fraction of
which
those.
Which that happens. It's usually the same people
right.
involved in so many of the missions of the church and the ministries
right.
and the commissions.
And it's all our responsibility. We all should have ownership.
And this, you know, looking at this, you know, and we were looking at this, while a quarter of the 351 parishes in the Archdiocese now receive financial aid, the Archdiocese will weigh additional factors besides this mission vitality when assessing the sustainability of the parish's capital needs. pastoral availability too. I mean, there's other issues here that we've got to look at within every parish.
That's right. We will always have some parishes that will need financial aid. We don't want to create any deserts within the archdiocese. We know that there are also – we have to be very creative and imaginative about what it means to have a parish. There are communities, for instance, that serve a wider population than their own membership, and those are important for the social fabric of that community. So we want to make sure that we look in a very imaginative way at what it means to be church.
Parishes are very vital homes for people. I mean, this is a lot their second home. So, you know, this is going to be, for some parishes, a very sensitive process, but again, very necessary.
Well, it is. Again, I think what's it's important to keep in mind is the aim here is to make sure that all of our parishes have the right resources in order to carry on the mission, rather than allowing them just to fade away slowly, hemorrhaging year after year, in which we close maybe two or three, and then all of a sudden, in 20 years, find ourselves having closed 100 parishes without any strategic plan.
Right. Now, Pope Francis is calling the entire church to dream and dream big. He wrote The Joy of the Gospel, and he said, I dream of a missionary option that is a missionary impulse capable of transforming everything so that the church's customs, ways of doing things, times and schedules, language and structures can be suitably channeled for the evangelization of today's world rather than for her self-preservation. Pretty powerful words here.
It is. He uses that image of the church needs to be a field hospital in the world. We're not just concerned about ourselves. There are a lot of wounded people out there, and we need to be able to be in the place where people live, where they're really suffering, and really look at ourselves as missionaries going into the world.
And there's a no doubt that the demographics have shifted dramatically. Some parish buildings, as you mentioned, are in disrepair. We have fewer priests to pastor. Resources are spread too thin. These realities absolutely need to be faced, but everybody who is part of these Catholic churches need to have a stake in this renewal.
Well, yes, and that's going to be part of the renewal. It's not just the whole business of how we're going to reconfigure parishes. It's a renewal that comes in having everybody becoming involved and have some ownership. I think that people feel maybe disenfranchised when they're not a part of the process. I think by making them part of the process, we're going to give them a sense of ownership and courage
Absolutely.
To move forward.
Absolutely. Switching gears a little bit, you know, our neighborhoods, our parishes, Archbishop, have been affected by violence, especially gun violence. It's been a very violent 18 months in Chicago, over 100 murders in Chicago already. What is your view on gun control?
Well, I wrote an op-ed in the local paper here, and I did so because it was clear to me after talking, especially to law enforcement, that a major issue is the availability of high-powered weapons. And there really has to be a review and a restriction of those weapons simply because the police feel outgunned. I'm very concerned about police safety as well as neighborhood safety. Our police, our law enforcement people get up every day, leave their families, and go into our cities to protect us. And they're outgunned many times by these high-powered weapons. And I think that it's time that we take a look at this and we look at the whole issue of the availability of guns that fall in the wrong hands.
And some of these, you know, stricter background checks, there's different ways to do this. The problem is some of these gangbangers, the illegal guns are always available on the street. It's something that's done more underground. So is it about stiffer penalties for having these guns and possession of these guns?
Well, I think that we do have to look at sentencing guidelines to make sure that if that's an important part of a deterrent, then we make sure that we make those decisions prudently. But I can tell you in talking to law enforcement people, they're more concerned about the availability that's out there and the restrictions that should be the sale and also the marketing of them. In our area, we have very porous borders, of course, with our neighboring states. They're concerned about that as well. So I think that as I listen to law enforcement more and more about this, and I'm concerned about their safety. That's the reason why I wrote that op-ed.
You grew up in Omaha, big family, one of nine children, five sisters, three brothers. You've been in South Dakota, Spokane, Washington, Washington, D.C., and now Chicago. So what do you do to blow off steam? Do you have time for yourself? Are you a sports fan? Have you explored the restaurant scene? What do you like to do?
Well, you know, I do like to visit with people. I get together many times on Sunday evenings with groups of priests just to get to know them. They host dinners at various places around the city, and I enjoy that very much. I try to get my exercise in. I love long walks. I do maybe about 4 or 5 days of in a week of 75-minute walks, brisk walk. I love to read, and of course, with as you mentioned, a large family, there's a considerable amount of time just keeping up with
everybody. Yeah.
My brothers and sisters and my nephews and nieces. All of them are college age and older right now. And it's a fun age for them and for me. So I keep busy.
Is everybody still back in Omaha, or are they kind of spread around the country at this point?
4 of the 9 are in Omaha, and then we have I have a brother in California, then sisters in Arizona, Wichita, Kansas, and Washington, D.C.
Very nice. Very cool. Well, when we come back, an Easter message from Archbishop Blaise Supich next on 720 WGN. Day player on 720 WGN, and now an Easter message from the Archbishop of Chicago, Blaise Supich.
Good morning and happy Easter to all of you. As we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, it's an opportunity for us to remind ourselves that it is the center of our faith. It's an opportunity to renew our hope. And yet, it's important to realize that the resurrection is not about only an event that happened 2,000 years ago. Jesus really conquered death and sin, but also is alive right now in our midst. He is working and active. And that conquest over sin and death is something that we experience as well as we turn to him in faith. In this year of mercy that the Holy Father has called, the emphasis about the resurrection is on God's mercy, the new life and hope that is given to us. That we need God's mercy and forgiveness, remembering that everything that comes from God is pure grace. It's a sheer gift of love, something that's totally unearned, and yet the Lord gives it to us in abundance. We owe God that praise and thanks, but also owe him the willingness on our part to share that mercy with each other. So my hope would be that people would, in this Jubilee Year of Mercy, and as we celebrate the resurrection, to look at each of our lives and see where God's mercy has been given to us, but where mercy now needs to be extended to each other, in our families, in the workplace, in our parishes, to maybe cut each other a little bit of slack, and to have a kind of language in our public discourse that really invites people into community life rather than hardens positions to the point where we do not make friends but only enemies. So this great feast of Easter is a moment for us to extend the mercy that we have received to others. Let us be touched by that mercy. Let us know that God works in our lives through the risen Lord who's present in our midst. And I pray for each and every one of you as you listen here today, and I ask your prayers in return. Whenever I visit the Holy Father, he always says to me, make sure you pray for me and ask your people to pray for me. So that is a great way, I think, for all of us to celebrate the resurrection, to keep each other in prayer, to keep the Holy Father in prayer. And in that spirit, I wish you again a happy Easter.
Thank you so much, and happy Easter to you as well.
Thank you.
Archbishop Blaise Supich on this Easter morning. It's 720 WGN.